Yeah. The agreement provides that all captured military personnel, and foreign civilians, be repatriated within the same time period as the withdrawal.
That is to say, there will be a return of all American prisoners within, and military or civilian, within 60 days after the agreement comes into force. North Vietnam has made itself responsible for accounting of our prisoners and missing in action throughout Indochina, and for the repatriation of American prisoners throughout Indochina. There is a separate provision that South Vietnamese civilians detained in South Vietnam, that their future should be determined through negotiation among the South Vietnamese parties, so that the return of our prisoners is not conditional on the disposition of Vietnamese prisoners in Vietnamese jails on both sides of the conflict. With respect to the political provisions, there are general, there's an affirmation of general principles guaranteeing the right of self-determination of the South Vietnamese people, and that the South Vietnamese people should decide their political future through free and democratic elections under international supervision.
As was pointed out by Radio Hanoi, the existing authorities with respect to both internal and external policies would remain in office. The two parties in Vietnam would negotiate about the timing of elections,
the nature of the elections,
and the offices for which these elections were to be held. There would be created an institution
called the National Council of National Reconciliation and Concord, whose general task would be to help promote the maintenance of the ceasefire and to supervise elections on its behalf.
Secondly, because of the different political circumstances in each of the Indochinese countries, the relationship of military operations there to the end of the war in Vietnam, or ceasefires there in relation to the end of the war in Vietnam, is somewhat complex. And we would like to discuss more concretely how to compress this time as much as possible. There were certain ambiguities that were raised by the interview that the North Vietnamese Prime Minister Pham Van Dong gave to one of the weekly journals, in which he seemed to be, with respect to one or two points, under a misapprehension as to what the agreement contained. And at any rate, we would like to have that clarified. There are linguistic problems in which the, for example, we call the National Council of Reconciliation an administrative structure in order to make clear that we do not see it as anything comparable to a coalition government. We want to make sure that the Vietnamese text conveys the same meaning. I must add that the word administrative structure was given to us in English by the Vietnamese, so this is not a maneuver on our part. There are some technical problems as to what clauses of the Geneva Accords to refer to in certain sections of the document. And there is a problem which was never settled in which the North Vietnamese, as they have pointed out in their broadcast, have proposed that the agreement be signed by the United States and North Vietnam. We on behalf of Saigon, they on behalf of their allies in South Vietnam. We have always held the view that we would leave it up to our allies whether they wanted a two-power document or whether they would wanted to sign themselves a document that establishes peace in their country. Now they prefer to participate in the signing of the peace. And it seems to us not an unreasonable proposal that a country on whose territory a war has been fought and whose population has been uprooted and has suffered so greatly, that it should have the right to sign its own peace treaty. This again strikes us as a not insuperable difficulty, but its acceptance will require the redrafting of certain sections of the document. And that again is a job that will require several hours of work. We have asked the North Vietnamese to meet with us on any date of their choice. We have, as has been reported, restricted our bombing in effect to the battle area in order to show our goodwill and to indicate that we are working within the framework of Xing agreements. We remain convinced that the issues that I have mentioned are soluble in a relatively, in a very brief period of time. We have undertaken, and I repeat it here publicly, to settle them at one more meeting and to remain at that meeting for as long as is necessary to complete the agreement. So this is the situation in which we find ourselves. With respect to Hanoi, we understand its disappointment that a schedule towards the realization of which it had made serious efforts could not be met for reasons beyond the control of any party. But they know, or they should know, and they certainly must know now, that peace is within reach in a matter of weeks, or less, dependent on when the meeting takes place. And that once peace is achieved, we will move from hostility to normalcy, and from normalcy to cooperation with the same seriousness with which we have conducted our previous less fortunate relationships with it. As far as Saigon is concerned, it is of course entitled to participate in the settlement of a war fought on its territory. Its people have suffered much, and they will remain there after we leave. Their views deserve great respect. In order to accelerate negotiations, we had presented them with conclusions which obviously could not be fully settled in a matter of 4 days that I spent in Saigon. But we are confident that our consultations with Saigon will produce agreement within the same time frame that I have indicated is required to complete the agreement with Hanoi, and that there will be no and that the negotiations can continue on the schedule that I have outlined. With respect to the American people, we have talked to you, ladies and gentlemen, here very often about the negotiations with respect to the peace. And we have been very conscious of the division and the anguish that the war has caused in this country. And one reason why the president has been so concerned with ending the war by negotiation and ending it in a manner that is consistent with our principles is because of the hope that the act of making peace could restore the unity that had sometimes been lost at certain periods during the war. And so that the agreement could be an act of healing rather than a source of new division. This remains our policy. We will not be stampeded into an agreement until its provisions are right. We will not be deflected from an agreement when its provisions are right. And with this attitude, and with some cooperation from the other side, we believe that we can restore both peace and unity to America very soon.
Henry Kissinger, in the first public account of the Vietnam peace negotiations. Because of its importance, we're bringing you today's White House statement by Kissinger in its entirety. We'll be back with more of this report on the prospect for peace in Indochina. We pause now for station identification.
This is the NBC Television Network.
Well, the White House is confident that it can be worked out. There are still some holes in a potential agreement. On the North Vietnamese side, North Vietnam is insisting that the agreement be signed by October 31st, which no longer appears to be possible. The reason the administration thinks the reason for this is that the North Vietnamese want a commitment from the Nixon administration before the election to carry out this agreement. In effect, Kissinger's appearance today was that commitment. North Vietnam put some pressure on the White House with its public statement, and the White House responded with a briefing that, in effect, commits it to this agreement publicly. On the Saigon side, there are still some very sticky points, and the negotiations still to come with President Thieu. Perhaps the major sticking point is the number of North Vietnamese troops still remaining in South Vietnam. There are over 100,000 North Vietnamese troops in South Vietnam. Thieu has called this an intolerable situation, but under the terms of the agreement, those troops would remain in place. So some kind of agreement has to be worked out, some kind of device has to be worked out whereby they would remain. It appears we'll have some kind of semantic obfuscation here. The North Vietnamese have never admitted they have troops in South Vietnam, so the agreement will probably make no mention of them as though they weren't even there. That appears to be the solution they're moving toward, but I think Thieu is going to scream about this before it's over. One other point, Thieu has been making a lot of noise about a coalition government, but if you look carefully at the agreement, he's not really being asked to accept a coalition government. So that does not appear to be a major obstacle. In short, there are still some holes. The administration, the White House, is confident those holes can be plugged up in a negotiating session that would last from 3 to 4 days with both Hanoi and Saigon.
Dick, what sort of pressure is the White House able to bring on President Thieu?
Well, in effect, it has unlimited pressure. It's a question of how much pressure it would want to put on Thieu publicly. I suspect there has already been some pressure put on Thieu, but they are holding out this prospect for Thieu. The White House is saying, you're not being forced into a coalition. You have 90% of the country under your control. You are guaranteed unlimited economic aid. You are allowed to have continued military aid in the form of replacement parts. You will have unlimited economic advisors if necessary. The best the Viet Cong can do in an election might be 15% of the vote. If you are unable to compete politically now, you will never be able to compete politically, and that's the situation.
Question now for John Cochran, who covers the Pentagon. John, is the Defense Department reasonably pleased with the military arrangements that will accompany a ceasefire if a ceasefire is arrived at?
Ed, the Pentagon really isn't saying anything that might be derived in any way as political. Secretary Laird is at the moment is in London for NATO talks. Incidentally, there's a gap in his schedule while he's in London. A few days are not accounted for there. We've speculated that possibly that has something to do with Vietnam negotiations. We don't know. The reaction at the Pentagon today was one of pleasure, but generally there wasn't much reaction. They're under very tight restrictions not to say anything. Mostly the talk around the Pentagon is about the return of POWs, contingency plans for that, how the ceasefire will go into effect. It's a simple matter to, of course, to order a cease to bombing from the Air Force men in Thailand and the Navy, of course, with carriers off the coast of North and South Vietnam. The return of the POWs, that's a very complex thing. Of course, many POWs are in Laos and in South Vietnam. We know very little about them. Where they would be picked up, we don't know. One contingency plan for pickup of prisoners in North Vietnam calls for American medevac planes to go into Hanoi, which, of course, would be a very interesting situation.
What happens militarily in the ceasefire on the ground? You said it would be a simple matter for American operations to be stopped, but what about the ground operations?
Well, of course, officially now, since August of 71, the South Vietnamese have been responsible for ground operations. That was the end of phase one of Vietnamization. In August of this year, the last of the American maneuver battalions left. We, in theory at least, are only having headquarters and logistical support troops over there. However, some American troops are involved in supporting the South Vietnamese on gunships, that sort of thing. And what would simply happen is that the American troops would be ordered not to take part in any offensive operations.
And is there any supposition that a ceasefire would not take, that that it would be too difficult to bring about because, as Henry Kissinger pointed out, there really aren't any front lines in the war? How would a ceasefire be enforced?
Well, the Pentagon is very concerned about the fact that they believe that the communications among the North Vietnamese and VC in the field is not that good. There's a joke that goes around the Pentagon that 10% of American troops never get the word about a directive, and the American military here feel that the communications among the North Vietnamese and the Viet Cong is even poorer than ours, much poorer than ours. So there is a fear that during a ceasefire, some VC or North Vietnamese could fire on American troops. And the problem then would be one of keeping down our response, merely to defend American troops and not to overreact.
There would also be a problem, perhaps, of discipline on the two sides, the Viet Cong and North Vietnamese side and the South Vietnamese side. Discipline imposed to maintain a ceasefire.
Ed Newman, I'd like to make a point here. That's another one of the sticking points in the next negotiating session. The White House, Kissinger, I think, made clear at his news conference that there is concern about what might happen at precisely the time of the ceasefire. The supervision is supposed to begin immediately thereafter, but the word immediately has not been precisely defined. Now, there is intelligence information showing that some of the Viet Cong have orders to continue fighting immediately after the ceasefire in an effort to extend some control, to show that they are still strong, to get their flags planted. And that's one of the reasons the administration wants to go back to the North Vietnamese to iron out this point very specifically.
And of course, Ed, you're aware that during past ceasefires, during holidays in Vietnam, the ceasefires have been broken. There have been American casualties, and the Pentagon is very fearful of that. They simply will have their men on alert at all times to be ready to take defensive operations.
Paul Duke, you've been sitting in the middle there, not saying anything so far. Is there any reaction in Congress to what Kissinger had to say today?
Well, Congress is not in session, of course, Ed, so there's no reaction. I'm sure that all members of Congress are pleased by this, as all Americans are.
And the effect on the election? Too early to say?
Well, I think a couple of things can be said, Ed. Most observers here had believed for some time that President Nixon had successfully neutralized the war as an issue. Now he may have captured this as an issue. There is another factor, too, I think, and that is that this obviously puts peace very much in the headlines, and it may diminish the importance of some other issues which the Democrats have been trying to capitalize on. For example, in the last few days, George McGovern has been making much ado about Republican corruption in the government. Well, now peace is very much the issue. or pieces very much in the headlines. It's the predominant theme, of course. And any way you look at it, it would appear to be a coup for Mr. Nixon.
Paul, you are in control now of the question and answer period that Henry Kissinger went through after making that statement, and I wonder whether you would lead us into it.
Well, I think the point could be made, Ed, that the Democrats have changed their campaign line in conjunction with what has happened. They're now suggesting that the reason we are getting peace, if indeed we are, is because the anti-war movement has applied so much pressure. They also question why it took so long for an agreement to be worked out. At his news conference, somebody asked Kissinger why an agreement was not reached right after Mr. Nixon took office.
There was no possibility of achieving this agreement 4 years ago because the other side consistently refused to discuss the separation of the political and military issues, because it always insisted that it had to settle the political issues with us and that we had to predetermine the future of South Vietnam in a negotiation with North Vietnam. As the statement from Hanoi said on October 8th, Hanoi for the first time made a what it called a very significant proposal in which it accepted the principles that the military issues should be settled first and that the political issues should be left essentially to a negotiation among the South Vietnamese parties, with just the most general principles to be settled in the negotiation, in the private negotiation. Could I have this text? I'll find it. Well, as they say, with a view to making the negotiations progress, this is reading from the Hanoi statement. At the private meeting on October 8th, the DRV side took a new, extremely important initiative. It put forward a draft agreement and proposed that the government and so on immediately agree upon and sign this agreement to rapidly restore peace in Vietnam. In that draft agreement, the DRV side proposed the cessation of the war throughout Vietnam, a ceasefire in South Vietnam, and a total withdrawal of U.S. forces. And then it said the two South Vietnamese parties shall settle together the internal matters of South Vietnam within 3 months after the ceasefire comes into effect. This is not an exact description of what they what the agreement says. The agreement does not say it must be done within 3 months. The agreement says that the two parties will do their utmost to get it done within 3 months. The exact text to which I referred is as follows. Therefore, as the U.S. side has many times proposed, the Vietnam problem would be solved in two steps. The first step is to end the war in Vietnam, to have a ceasefire in South Vietnam, to end U.S. military involvement in South Vietnam. In the second step, the South Vietnamese sides will jointly solve South Vietnamese internal problems. This has been our position since the beginning of these negotiations. It was never accepted 4 years ago, 3 years ago, or 2 months ago. The first time it was accepted was on October 8th. As soon as it was accepted, we completed, within 4 days, a rough draft of an agreement from which we have since been operating.
What is their recourse if the negotiations for the elections break down? That has been a point which North Vietnam has balked at in the past, saying, you know, they could rig elections or something like that.
Question?
The question is, what is the recourse if the negotiations for the elections break down? The agreement provides that the ceasefire is without time limit.
President Tu go along with his whole deal?
As I have pointed out, the South Vietnamese agree with many parts of it and disagree with some aspects of it. And we have, we agree with some of their disagreements and not with all. The South Vietnamese were informed of the negotiations as they went along. However, the negotiations were really were composed of two phases. There was the negotiation between July 19th and October 8th. In that negotiation, the other side constantly proposed various formula for the institution of a coalition government, which would replace the existing government in Saigon and which would assume governmental power. And Saigon was informed. I took a trip to Saigon in the middle of August to have a long discussion with the South Vietnamese government. My deputy, General Haig, had another trip, took another trip to present to them the various formulations that had been developed. On October 8th, for the first time, Hanoi presented the different approach, which they have correctly described in their statement. They then insisted that we, on the basis of this approach, begin to draft the outline of an agreement in order to meet their deadline for October 31st. Now, if we had wanted to protract negotiations, we could easily have said that we have to return to Washington first, or return to Saigon for further consultation. We believed that this was such an important step on the part of the North Vietnamese that took into account so many of the proposals that we had made, and such a significant movement in the direction of the position consistently held by this administration, that we had an obligation, despite the risks that were involved, of working with them to complete at least an outline of an agreement. And we spent 4 days, sometimes working 16 hours a day, in order to complete this draft agreement, or at least the outline of this draft agreement. I mention this only because if we had wanted to delay, we had many much better opportunities than to raise a few objections of the kind that I have described at the very end. But we did insist, and we constantly emphasized it, that we could not conclude this agreement without a full discussion with our allies in Vietnam. And I want to make clear another thing, that many of the concerns that I have expressed here, while they are also shared by Saigon, are ours as well. And the particular issues that I raised would require resolution if the agreement is to bring a real peace, and if it is not to lead immediately to endless disputes as to what its provisions mean.
Why are you waiting for Hanoi to propose the date of your next meeting? And why don't you suggest that you start tomorrow?
Because the question is, why do we leave it to Hanoi to propose the date of the next meeting? Why don't we propose that it start tomorrow? Because we are not eager to score debating points. Obviously, the North Vietnamese negotiators have to get wherever we are going to meet from where they are.